Hello, and welcome to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. This is where we look at various nutrition and fitness-related topics through the lens of application. We want to give you practical takeaways so that you can create your healthiest, best self backed by knowledge. Now, on to the episode with your host, Coach Lisa.
Hello, and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the absolute pleasure of speaking with Dr. Bill Campbell. He is an exercise science professor. He's the director of the Performance and Physique Enhancement Lab. He has a research review called Body by Science, and he also has a super interesting nutrition course that he runs together with Dr. Lane Norton. Bill, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to get to talk to you.
We already have a bit of a plan for a few topics that I want to touch on. But before we get into all these exciting things like your high carb experiment or talking about refeeds and diet breaks, et cetera, I would love for you to just give us a little bit of a background of who you are, what brought you into exercise science and the passion that you have, and the passion for teaching as well.
Sure. All right. So my initial career was in marketing, not in exercise science or nutrition. But I love to work out at the time. I love lifting weights, and I really love the science of dietary supplements. Like, I could take something like creatine and it will help me in my workouts. And that just fascinated me. So I kind of found myself loving that so much that I said, maybe I should change my careers, because I used to sell weed killer and bug killer, and I wasn't all that passionate about killing weeds or bugs. didn't get me out of bed in the morning. well, it did, but more begrudgingly. So I just thought I need to probably do a career change, because I was, you know, in my early 20s at the time. But the problem was, I had no formal training in exercise or nutrition. Everything I had taken was business related. And this was even, I'm old enough now, my degree was right around the same time the internet was becoming accessible to everybody. So it wasn't even like my business degree and marketing was internet based. So went back to school for several years, took biology, organic chemistry, biochemistry, anatomy and physiology, did all those things. Then I got into a master's program, and I started to think, I think I will make the biggest impact on this field if I go into research, if I go into academia. And that's what I did. And it suited me well, because I'm very cynical. My mind questions everything and I don't believe much. And so I like to have data. So my cynical mind really prepared me, or it was a very good fit for being a scientist, because I don't really believe anything. Until I do my education. So fast forward to today, I run my own lab, the Performance and Physique Enhancement Laboratory, where my lab really specializes in helping people optimize their physiques within a maintainable lifestyle.
Interesting. Who doesn't want that, right? Physique with a maintainable lifestyle. And because, I mean, of course, many of the pictures that we see online these days are these super, super shredded individuals. And as you and I both know, most of that is not maintainable. Like, when someone is stage lean, it looks awesome, but certainly not maintainable. So one of the very recent experiments that you have run and that really sparked my interest, you titled the high carb experiment. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about, well, firstly, why you wanted to run this experiment. And I mean, we've had many years of what's better, high carb, low fat, high fat, low carb, blah, 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 all these kind of wars continuing on. So I could imagine that some of that sparked your interest. What was the premise of this experiment?
So I was getting a lot of questions, which I get a lot of questions, sometimes hundreds of questions every week. And one of the areas that I think was confusing a lot of people was this belief that you could not lose fat when eating carbs, or that carbs were somehow evil. And where this came from, it had a scientific theory, I'm going to use that word theory, basis, called the carbohydrate insulin model of obesity. And that model suggests that the reason that the obesity rates have skyrocketed is because of the increase in simple sugar or high glycemic carbohydrate intakes. So that was that theory, and that can be debated. But people were taking that theory and then applying it to weight loss, which I don't think the original, I mean, a lot of people do that. And I even have statements from some of the scientific papers that advocate for this theory of obesity that you can't even lose weight. So it's not like they were not guilty in some of this. But a lot of people were being, in my opinion, confused. Like, well, if you're going to go on a diet, you make sure that you eliminate carbs. And I was seeing enough confusion, getting enough questions that I was like, let me do something in the scientific realm where all people that could potentially ever be confused by this can point to one study. And that study was a case study that I did on myself. Now, we have not published this data yet. We're about to present this data next month at the International Society of Sports Nutrition Conference. So I'm not able to share all the results, but what I can share is everything that we did. So essentially what I did was I gave my life away in my nutrition life to this case study for about 18 months, a little less than 18 months. What I did was for 6 months, I increased my carbohydrate intake a lot. And not only did I just eat more carbs, I specifically sought out to eat the highest, very high glycemic or glycemic load carbohydrates. So if you look at my diet, I had a lot of sugared cereal, Fruity Pebbles, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, soda, a lot of processed foods, and all of the foods that people would say, this is why you can't lose weight. So I had to increase that for 6 months, not trying to diet and not trying to gain weight, but just to make sure that I was adapted to this.
So interject here, was it isocaloric? Basically, so you kept your calories the same, you just increased the carbs. So you basically took it from fats and a little bit of protein as well, or protein stayed the same?
No, I had to lower my protein to very low levels. Yeah, so that was the biggest change too, because I've eaten high protein most of my adult life. And for the first time in my life, my protein was really low. It was like around like 1.2 grams per kg, 1 gram per kg, somewhere around there. And again, I did this for 6 months. I set my training program up so that when it was time to start the study, the only thing I was changing was the calories. So I was eating the same types of foods, low protein, high sugar carbohydrates, not changing anything about my training. I resistance trained almost always about 3 days per week. And I did cardio, low intensity cardio, like running a mile, maybe walking 30 minutes on days that I didn't lift. So now the case study started, and the goal was, oh, I also need to say, I actually was my heaviest that I've ever been in my life during this time. And I maintained my heaviest weight again for about 6 months because, again, that was just to make sure that the only thing changing was calories. So basically, I'm testing. It's all about calories, not about what you eat, not about the types of calories.
Did you pay attention to fiber as well? Sorry to interrupt.
What was the question?
You pay attention to fiber as well, or that was just, you know, wherever it fell?
Yeah, whatever. And it was low. So now I'm over the study for probably about 6 months, and I'm like really sensitive to fiber now, like not sensitive, but I'm like, I want to make sure I get fiber because I went for a long time without prioritizing it. The goal was I'm going to do this case study until I lose 10%. No, was it 5%? 10% of my body weight. So I had to go from, sorry, I'm going to use American metrics here, 231 pounds to 207 pounds. That was the amount of weight I had to lose. And it took me from, I think we started in March and all the way through September. So it was about 30 weeks to lose all of that body weight. So essentially what I demonstrated was, and let me make this point first. It is the worst. I would never advocate that people diet like this. This actually violates a lot of my principles. I don't think you should have low protein when dieting. I think you should avoid processed foods most of the time. So I did two things. I when you dieted like I did, you're making it as hard as possible because the foods I was eating don't satiate you, so you're more hungry. So I want to make sure I say that. That is not how I would advocate. But once again, this is now the latest study to report. It doesn't matter what you eat. As long as you're in a caloric deficit, you will lose body fat. And I lost a ton of body fat.
Very, very interesting to hear. And I can imagine it was not a lot of fun in terms of hunger and satiation. Because I mean, often when we diet, we switch to being more focused on things like potatoes or, you know, other fibrous carb sources. So it certainly doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Now, when it comes to the weight that you lost, was there an analysis in regards to fat versus lean mass? What was the distribution there?
Yeah, so that's where I'm, and I want to be able to give you the answers, but I can't, only because we haven't made this data available yet. And let me explain why I can't give details. When I submit this to a journal, I have to sign a statement that I didn't discuss the results prior to an academic conference or prior to publishing this. So that's why I can give generalities for sure. I didn't lose any muscle, which is surprising. So almost all of the weight I lost was fat. And we would have to ask, or why didn't I lose much muscle? Because my protein was so low. Well, two things. One, the resistance training didn't change at all. So I had that stimulus. There's one. And two, we have research that has reported that insulin is anti-catabolic. So I was having pretty high insulin, presumably. Now, we didn't measure my insulin throughout this entire study period because I was eating these carbs that would spike insulin. So my first theory here is the insulin that I was generating helped preserve my lean muscle mass, in addition to the resistance training stimulus. And my protein was like a gram per kg. So it was low. If I had lost muscle, I wouldn't have been surprised. But even at the outset, I said, I won't be surprised if I maintain my muscle mass either. And we also have to appreciate, I have more muscle than an average man my age, but it's not like I'm a bodybuilder and I have tons of muscle to lose. So I think all of those things play into that.
Gotcha. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that with us. And in regards to protein, so you mentioned several times that at 1 or 1.2 grams per kg, your protein was set very low. So now in recent months, we've heard numerous different things in regards to, oh, maybe 1.6 is actually sufficient. Or then you hear other people that say, no, ideally for optimizing body composition, you know, you don't want to be closer to 2 grams per kg or something like that. With the athletes in your lab, or even just with you know, any recommendations that you give, with the current standings, what would be your ideal recommendation for anyone who is trying to be lean, lifestyle lean?
Yeah. Oh, and I'll answer that. I just want to also say, during my, you know, whatever it was, 6 months, 30 weeks of my diet, I took diet breaks and refeed. So most weekends I increased my calories. So I was not in a caloric deficit for 30 straight weeks. There were many days calories were back to maintenance level. So that also, I think, had a part in helping maintain my muscle mass.
Gotcha.
My protein recommendations are between, and this would be for pretty much anybody, but 1.6 to 2.2 grams per kg. And let me say this, you won't really find any scientific evidence to go above 1.6 grams per kg to build muscle. I think there is some evidence that going higher than that is actually better for body fat reduction. So I look at protein as both a muscle building nutrient and a fat loss nutrient, which a lot of people don't look at protein as fat loss, but we have multiple studies that I can cite that would discuss this or that have reported this. So essentially, anywhere in that range, 1.6 grams per kg. So that to me would be the goal for almost everybody. If you hit that, you can feel very good that you're doing everything you can to maximize your muscle mass. If you go higher, there's no harm. And we're talking healthy people here, nobody with kidney disease, metabolic disease. So if you go higher, up to 2.2 grams per kg, again, that's where I'd say you might get some additional body composition benefits in the body fat compartment. Let me also say, in females, where we see the biggest improvements in body composition, and this is amazing because this is absent of any exercise stimulus, but the females that start with a low protein intake, 1.0, 1.2 grams per kg, and if we do nothing else but increase their protein up to 1.6 or even 1.8 grams per kg, two things happen. They gain lean mass and they lose body fat with no other exercise stimulus. So protein, there's an example. And again, I'm referring to two studies in humans, and these are in sedentary females. In my own lab, I can point to research where we've lost body fat in resistance-trained females when we went even higher, where we went to 2.5 grams per kg. So that's why I say the higher you go, there's more body fat. There's the potential for more body fat. One last statement. The biggest benefits are going from low into this moderate 1.6 to 1.8. But the higher and higher you go, the less and less of a benefit there is. So I don't want to tell people, oh, eat as much as you can. I don't think that's true. There's less and less of a benefit the more and more you take.
That's a really, really great and important message for anyone listening. I think that just generally, even without changing anything in regards to exercise, that is beneficial in and of itself. And I think the differentiation between the benefits for muscle growth, but also the benefits for fat loss, so big, even just like for me, from a satiation point of view. I mean, as we know, adherence, the single most important factor. So if we're more satiated, we're going to be adherent for longer or for more of the time. And you mentioned your own refeed days and diet breaks. So where were they scheduled most of the time, or was it kind of like, I'm pretty hungry, I'm going to just take an intuitive refeed day today, or it was a birthday, or were they scheduled in advance?
Yeah, so it was pretty much every weekend that I would go back to my pre-diet maintenance calories and any time that I traveled. So if I traveled for work or if I was on vacation, and essentially what I did was I went back to my maintenance calories, which was, I think, around 3,000 calories for those days. So I would say they were scheduled. I've never had a day where I just said, hey, today's a hard day, I'm going to change this. If I was traveling like in the middle of the week, or if, let's just say, if there was a birthday, then I would do a refeed that day. And then that weekend I would diet. So maybe I would switch out the days, but never was there just a changing on the day. And I never went above my pre-diet maintenance calories, except for one day I was in Las Vegas. And I love this place called Sugar Factory, and it's so high calories. And I was with my family, so I knew. So there was the one day that when I publish this, you're going to see a spike in the calories. And when we publish this, I'm going to list every gram of food that I ate for the entire 30 weeks so that people can see just how, and you know, it's kind of embarrassing. But it will be the study that anybody can point to easily to say you can eat carbs and still lose fat. Don't recommend it, at least not like this, but it can be done.
That's awesome. Very, very cool. And so in general, with your athletes or other people that you help dieting, do you recommend refeed days or diet breaks for them as well? Is that something that the research generally backs up?
Yeah, so I'm a huge advocate for diet breaks, and diet breaks just make sure we're on the same page. Yes, that's taking like 7, sometimes up to 1 to 2 weeks off of your diet. So you're just taking a break from the diet. A refeed is the same thing, but it's usually 1 or 2 days, maybe 3 days. So I call weekend breaks refeeds, and a vacation from my diet a diet break. I will never diet again for long periods of time. Now, if I'm trying to do something aggressive for, you know, up to 14 days, I might not take a refeed or break in that situation. But I personally will never diet again without implementing these. I think there's a lot of harm with elongated dieting phases, whereas these, now again, I didn't test this, but I still believe that was part of the reason why I was able to maintain my muscle mass with such low protein. And then you asked a second question, which complicates it. Does the research support it? And I've published 2 studies in this, and really the research is not all that positive. It's not negative, but it's not overwhelmingly positive to say you should definitely do these. So let me just elaborate on this. There was one study in 2018, I think it was 2018, called the Matador study, that got a lot of attention because it showed significantly greater weight loss, significantly greater fat loss in males with obesity that did a 2-week on and a 2-week diet break or 2-week off plan. And this was like a 30-week or 16-week dieting phase. And a lot of people, including myself, kind of latched on to this study and said, wow, diet breaks are awesome. Prior to that, there was another diet break study that showed no harm. After that, my lab did essentially, let's say 1 diet break study in resistance trained females. It did not show a body fat benefit. There was a study done in Australia in resistance trained males and females. It also did not show a fat loss benefit. What we did see in my lab and in the Australian study lab was essentially the same thing. Both of us did psychological assessments of our dieters during this. And in both cases, the groups that were taking the diet breaks, yes, they didn't lose more fat, but they reported a lower drive to eat, or in our case, a lower disinhibition, which means they had a lower subjective desire to overeat food. So my study was only 6 weeks. The other one, I think, was 12 weeks of dieting. And I would hypothesize that if you have lower hunger and a lower drive to eat, and you're less susceptible to binge eating and overeating when dieting, the longer and longer the diet goes, the less likely you would be to overeat and give into those desires to overeat. So those 2 studies, to me, at least psychologically, were clearly in favor of taking diet breaks. But I can't point to the research and say, yep, you lose more fat. That is not there. That is absent, except for the one study. Just me speaking for myself, if I diet Monday through Friday and I know Saturday and Sunday I can take a break, it makes it dieting so much easier. But if you told me, hey, it's going to be like 3 months before my diet's over and I have to do this every day, that's a daunting outlook. And I think I'd become violent, maybe, like it would grouchy. There's nothing about that would appeal to me as a dieter.
That makes absolute sense. I do want to point out a couple of things. Again, like with you saying diet breaks, I think just to clarify for the audience as well, you mentioned specifically you brought your calories up to maintenance. I think oftentimes when people hear diet break, they might think cheat day, or they might think in a surplus or whatever. You said simply up to maintenance. And correct me if I'm wrong, but with the Matador study as well, that also meant the duration of the entire weight loss phase for the people taking the diet break was significantly longer than those that didn't take the diet breaks. Is that correct? Just to kind of like highlight that, yeah, if we have 2 weeks in a deficit, 2 weeks in at maintenance, 2 weeks deficit, et cetera, of course, it's going to take a little bit longer to get to where we want to go. But of course, if we're jeopardizing adherence by just trying to be in a deficit the whole time, it might be worth taking those extra weeks. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. Generally, it's going to take a little bit longer to get to the same goal. But I would say that's unless you're in a hurry to lose body fat, which I don't think you should be. Two exceptions. If you're a competitor, you have to step on stage. And I used to be a trainer. And so I'm also going to give some love to brides, like people who are getting married. Like they're very motivated to, they always seem to, they have always were buying dresses that they currently couldn't fit in, that then they're like, hey, I have to fit into this dress. So those two situations, okay, I'll give you a pass to be aggressive. But to me, diet breaks just reinforce healthy outlooks on the process. It should be a while because it should be a part of your lifestyle, not a sprint. Because when it's a sprint, the results are never lasting.
100%. I love that. I do think for a nutrition coach, it can sometimes be a challenge to gauge what type of client you have. And of course, open conversation, communication with the client is quite helpful. But for instance, I think sometimes in the first couple of weeks, we might not need diet breaks. People are super motivated. They are on a roll. Sometimes I've even found when implementing diet breaks too early on, it's sort of disrupts momentum that someone might have and might not be the best thing in terms of adherence also. But then otherwise, you know, as time goes on, as the desire to have to feel satiated or something at some point, I think super, super helpful, as you mentioned, with regards to mindset adherence. You did mention those few scenarios where we might want to lose weight more rapidly, and also heading into summer, some people might think about their vacation or some specific date that they might want to lose weight for. What are some quote-unquote rapid fat loss strategies that one can employ other than just simply being in a calorie deficit?
Yeah, this is an area of active interest for me and my lab, so I love talking about this. I'll start with my mind has changed on this. If you had asked me 2 years ago what this question, I would have said you should never even think about losing weight quickly. It's not good, or it causes harm. And I would go on to list 12 harms that you would just want to avoid. But after reading some research, after doing my own lab's research in this area, where I've changed my mind is, we can employ very aggressive fat loss strategies as long as it's a very short period of time. So that's the key. I think if you are aggressive or severe dieting, if it's only a few days and then you come back out of it, what happens is you do target fat loss and you haven't been in this severe deficit long enough to cause the loss of muscle mass. At least that's what we found in my lab study. And also I've seen this in some of the other studies. So now what does that look like practically? Well, in my head, there's basically, and I'm working through this now, but my philosophy would be there's three different approaches, each one a little less severe and each one looking a little different. So there's like a 7-day approach where 4 days out of seven, you're eating almost no calories and doing a high volume of low intensity exercise. A lot of people would refer to this as a protein sparing modified fast. Have you ever heard of that term?
I've heard Menno Hanselmans talking about that term in particular, but yeah.
Okay. So I'll just say this, what we just got approval for this study last week. What we're doing is having our subjects eat 1.6 grams of protein per day for 4 days, almost nothing else, like just whatever marginal calories from fat and carbs would come with that. So ideally none, but again, cheese might have a gram of carbs. Actually, no, that cheese would never help. There's too much fat. Even protein supplements sometimes have a little bit of fat or carbs. So they're only eating 1.6 grams per kg. So that's going to be for most people, 200-300 calories per day. So we have our subjects doing that for 4 consecutive days and walking 6 hours per day for 4 days. No resistance training during this time. And then for the next 3 days, we have them just going back to their maintenance calories to recover from this so that we can get a valid body composition assessment. Because if we tested their body fat on day 5, they're going to likely be depleted of water. Carbs will be depleted. So it's not a good time to test how much fat was actually lost. So that's part of the reason why we do that. Now, this study has already been done in males. We're doing it in females. And in males, it was really fascinating. They lost, obviously, a significant amount of body weight. But what made me a believer of this, or what changed my mind, they maintain that fat loss 30 days later, and even out to a year later, most of the weight that they lost during those 4 intense days was maintained. And in that other study in males, they actually had them walk 8 hours per day and do 45 minutes of arm crank exercise, which we're not having our female subjects do. And then my lab did a 28-day rapid fat loss study. We have not published this yet, but I can talk about it because we've presented it at a conference. We had 2 weeks, it was 2 phases, 14 days of approximately a 40% caloric deficit. And then for the next 2 weeks, we said we had them increase their calories to whatever they wanted. And on average, it was about a 15% caloric deficit for the next 2 weeks. And after that month, when we accounted for body water changes, they had lost significant amount of body fat, not surprising, but they maintained all of their, what I call dry fat-free mass, which is all of their muscle, but accounting for the losses of water. And by the way, if you're ever going to read research on this, if you don't measure total body water changes, it will look like you're losing a lot of lean body mass or lean muscle mass that you really are not losing. You're losing a lot of water weight. And you just have to account for that. So rapid fat loss, to go back to your general question, as long as it's quick, I think you can be very aggressive and target fat loss and not have these negative outcomes that we do see with aggressive diets that last for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Super interesting. I'll be very interested to hear also what comes out of the female study, particularly because I think women are often a bit more susceptible in terms of hormones, but it sounds like the duration is so short that it's not actually affecting hormonal health. So perhaps still some positive outlook on that. I think the dangers with these aggressive short diets is often that it's so enticing to people. They see results so quickly, so they prolong it or keep going with it for longer and longer and longer, as opposed to being happy with what they achieved over that month and then letting that be it. Or of course, the aggressive things turn into more of a yo-yo dieting, where we have the over restriction during the week and then the party animal on the weekends. And that's definitely not what you're talking about, I don't think.
Yeah, you make a good point. You have to understand this is, you will sabotage your own efforts if you keep going. Study after study after study I can show you what happens. What happens is, within a short period of time, you have more body fat on your body than you had before you started this whole thing. But with this very short-term approach, the males, we showed even up to a year. In my study, it was only up to a month. And we're going to also replicate that. We're going to have our female subjects get tested after a month. And you said about hormones, it's funny. We're doing this latest study in females as a case series studies. So that means we're only recruiting 8 females. 2 we are recruiting that are premenopausal, 2 that are perimenopausal, so going through menopause now. And then the last 4 subjects are postmenopausal, 2 of which that are taking HRT and 2 of which who are not. So I'm kind of doing this. This is a general, let's just call it pilot research to just inform me of ideas for future research on fat loss in a midlife female stage.
Super cool. I love that subject design or subject selection. Sounds very, very interesting. So I'm going to stay tuned for that for sure.
Yeah.
I would love to hear a little bit about your nutrition coaching course that you have. And of course, I assume you teach all the basics, you know, macros, whatever adjustments to make in a reverse diet, whatever, et cetera, also. But I would presume that there is also a few special nuggets in that course in regards to maybe how to become an exceptional coach, or what might differentiate someone who goes through your program from someone else who goes through whatever program. So what is something that, in your opinion, makes for an exceptional coach, whether that is training or nutrition or both, or yeah, that someone can look into a little bit and improve themselves in?
Yes, I like this question. What my opinion of what makes an exceptional coach, I think, is somebody who cares about their client. And by caring, it's somebody who's actually going to listen to what the client's needs are, what they're struggling with. And if you have coaches that have hundreds of clients, that cannot happen. So it's somebody that, again, will take the time to listen to their client. And then it's also someone who is taking the time to invest in keeping up to date with the latest research on whatever your client needs help with. So in my world, it's fat loss, building muscle. And that's a special skill set because it's a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort to read research. And that's where I would say, well, my research review or other types of things like that can really help coaches. So you are the best coach is somebody who understands what their clients' needs are and who has an awareness of the most up-to-date research to tap into and apply those research principles to your to what your client needs. So there's my answer to that. My course with Lane Norton, it's called Physique Coaching Academy. It's the most comprehensive evidence-based coaching course, I think, ever created. It is every word from, you know, we started with two blank pieces of paper or blank documents, and Lane and I built this from the ground up. Hundreds and hundreds of references that we cited, but obviously the course is based on thousands of references. His 20 years of coaching experience, my 20 years of being in research and academia. And I would just say it's what makes it unique is we present to you the research fundamentals, the evidence-based principles that you as a coach can apply to your clientele needs. So we have modules on resistance training design, the role of aerobic exercise in fat loss, does it impact muscle gain, the basic nutrition like macronutrients, adjustments, advanced nutrition strategies, diet breaks, reverse dieting, refeeds, things like that. Onboarding clients, the, you know, referring out when it's out of our scope. We have a module on supplements for fat loss, supplements for muscle building. So that's a general overview of the course.
Very cool. Yeah, I think I love that you even have a section on referring out when it exceeds our scope, because I believe, especially initially, a coach or trainer might have resistance towards saying, I don't know, or I'm going to ask someone, whereas that can actually be, in my opinion, a sign of strength. If you say to your client, I don't know, I'm going to try to learn, or, you know, are you open to trying XYZ? I don't actually have never done this strategy with someone before. So yeah, I like that is mentioned specifically. And as you take someone through this course, is there also like a bit of a question and answer possibility, you know, if someone has a guinea pig client, or maybe even some actual clients already, and they have specific scenarios, is there like a I don't know like a weekly classroom or so to ask those questions?
No, we don't have an active Q&A session. We do have a similar product that is live sessions where we offer that, but that is not part of that. That's called Fitness Hub, that Lane and I are in there every month, along with a bunch of other people. But the actual course we don't have that capability, at least not currently.
So yeah, very cool that you have this fitness hub. And in regards to the research review, yeah, I think it's so helpful for someone like myself to have others just look at multiple resources or think about, hey, what's come out in this month, and then selecting a few items. I have to admit, I have not specifically read your research review. I have read some of Lane's reps, or I've read Alan Aragon's research review, or Mass, etc. But yes. In your selection process, do you have like one article from training, one article that pertains to nutrition, or is it just kind of what speaks to you that month?
So it's now the only research review that's solely dedicated to fat loss and building muscle. So I do not go outside of that realm. Now, within that, those topic areas, we talk about, like this month, I have an article on sleep. And man, if you don't prioritize sleep, that research, and this is now the second time I've reviewed a sleep article. It's powerful. So in the issue, I talk about this triangle. Like if somebody wants to lose body fat, of course we have to have a nutrition focus, a caloric deficit. And that has a lot of other sub principles, high protein, sustainability. And then of course we want to maintain our muscle mass when dieting. So we have an exercise component to weight loss. But now I'm actually, this triangle, that third point is, I would call it lifestyle, but it's sleep is the biggest impact. Because if you're already exercising and you're getting enough sleep, well, now you've those are the biggest movers of your lifestyle, and hopefully stress reduction as well. So this month, it'll come out in 2 or 3 days, a fascinating sleep study that really puts people on notice as a coach. And again, I think coaches are the main subscribers of my research review that have fat loss clients. It's very, very compelling to say, if I'm not currently prioritizing this sleep, they may be spinning their wheels and dieting and doing a lot of exercise and not getting much out of it. Whereas if we could just get them to sleep while they're doing these things, the progress will likely ensue. So it had an impact on me. I'm not a sleep loss expert, but I've seen enough research now over, and this is coming up on 2 years, two studies in particular. So there's one example. Another example is I'm working on the June issue. This one's a SAD study. This is for women comparing premenopausal versus postmenopausal females and how they respond to a resistance training program. And it's not good. At least this one study. Now there are limitations. So I don't want to be a fear monger and say, you'll never build muscle if you're 50 and above. Plenty of research that says you build muscle and strength. But clearly what I'm seeing, at least in this study, is a muted or delayed response compared to a younger female. And then I'm going to follow this up in a few months with HRT, another study on HRT. Another thing that I really focus on is giving people the evidence for why protein is so important when dieting. So a lot of the past issues talk about that. And I even had one issue where I covered a study with that answers why. Why does high protein, how in the world can that cause fat loss? Well, I have a really well-controlled human study that talks about it. And then lastly, caffeine for fat loss, fish oil for building muscle and body composition. So I even have supplement studies sometimes as well. Why tracking your macros seems to be better. So again, it's a very diverse array of studies, but it's always focused on either losing body fat or building muscle.
Love it. Very, very clear target. And all those topics sound so interesting. When you spoke about sleep or I love that we're speaking more about sleep. It feels like in recent years, it has become so much more of a topic. And often it's like, oh no, but I can't sleep more. Or people have various constraints in terms of family. I personally, when I first became more interested in sleep, I was working shift work in a police setting. And I read, I don't know if you're familiar with Matthew Walker's book, Why We Sleep.
I've heard of it.
That opened my eyes and I was like, oh no, I need to get out of this. Needless to say, I'm here now and much better. But the other studies also sounded super interesting with the pre and postmenopausal women. I assume both of those were without any hormone replacement or no testosterone or anything given.
Correct.
But that sounds super interesting. So I'm going to make sure that I'm reading one of your Body by Science reviews as well.
Yeah. And let me tell you, if you go to my website, you can get a free, like I give you like the highlight of year one. So it's, if you can tell that you like it. Here's something else. I only summarize two articles per month, but I go pretty, you know, pretty deep into it. And I like all the other research reviews, but mine is shorter and it's less expensive. It's $7.99 a month. And the one thing I love about this, you actually retain the information. I've tried to read other publications and there's too many studies that I never was able to just even read them all. Mine, I'll just say this. If you're a coach, a fitness professional, and you work with weight loss clients, you will, it's $7.99 a month. It's the best investment you can make. I promise it changes how you program for clients. And at the least, it will be, hey, Mike, you're not getting enough sleep. Read this study, or don't read the study. Here's the citation on why I want you to sleep. The research is clear. So it just gives people help in their clientele. And again, it's priced lower than any of the other research reviews.
That's very, very cool. Yeah, I found that exactly to your point of like a coach trying to keep up with the recent research is quite difficult. About a year and a half ago, I started a group of coaches where once a week we discuss an article that has come out or that sparks our interest. But I mean, if we can base that on something as comprehensive as your research review, that's going to make my life easier too. So absolutely, I will be looking at Body by Science. So Bill, I just want to say thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. I've truly appreciated you making the time for this conversation. Everybody will have to go and check out all the links that I put in the show notes, but maybe you want to shout out your Instagram. I assume that's where you are most active as well.
Yeah, currently it's the only place that I'm active. Easy to find me there. It's Bill Campbell, PhD.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, or share the episode on social. Very much appreciated. You can also follow us on Instagram at Nutrition Coaching and Life, or head to our website, www.nutritioncoachingandlife.com, where we provide more valuable content. Have a wonderful day. Now go out and work on your best self.